Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Time to go blitzing around the Beltway. Grant and Danny, just after noon, halfway home on 106.7 The Fan. Chad Dukes versus the world today at 2 o'clock. Coming up, second half of the show. What do you hope the Redskins brass learned from watching the playoffs? If Bruce Allen had a little steno pad out, what do you hope he jotted down about his offseason plan while watching games this weekend? We'll also get you a preview of the national title game tonight. We'll go around the NFL, preview some of the upcoming playoff matchups this weekend. We've got some audio from our Kirk Cousins exclusive on Friday. He thinks he can be paid handsomely and the team can still surround him with the necessary talent via the salary cap to win. We'll talk about whether or not that is likely and whether or not you agree. But let's get to our Beltway Blitz and start things off with the Redskins. Our beat reporter is Craig Hoffman, who was excellent with us on air, on stage at Jam and Java on Friday. When Kirk took the stage, what was your big takeaway?
I think that the guaranteed money is going to be necessary to get this done. And if I were the Redskins, I would get real creative with this deal because I think you're dealing with three parties kind of here. You're dealing with the team. You're dealing with Cousins. You're also dealing with Mike McCartney, his agent, who is trying to get the best deal that he can and kind of establish himself as one of the top agents around the NFL. So if he can be the first agent ever to, say, get 100% guarantees for his client, I think that suits well for Mike. I think that suits well for Kirk because he knows exactly what he's signing up for. And I don't think it's the worst idea in the world for the Redskins if they then shorten the length of the deal down to, say, 3 years. So like a 3-year $75 million or 3-year $78 million deal, fully guaranteed. Like, I think something like that would be an interesting kind of offer that's different. But that guaranteed money made it seem clear that that's what it's going to take to sign Kirk Cousins.
We've got quotes from Kirk, and we generally know how he feels. I mean, I'm sure he keeps a couple things close to the vest, but you can read between the lines. It's as much about what he doesn't say as what he does. So we kind of have a pretty good idea of his intentions. We don't know what the Redskins are thinking. We don't even know who the Redskins are, quote-unquote. We don't know if
right.
Eric Schaefer's got a different mind than Bruce Allen, than Dan Snyder, et cetera. To the best of your ability, what are the Redskins thinking here?
I think they would love to sign Kirk Cousins at a price that the rest of the league looks at and goes, hey, that wasn't outrageous. Like, I think the PR stuff matters to a number of important decision makers in that building. They have to feel like they at least didn't get worked in the negotiations. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, their kind of view of reality sometimes is a little bit different than what the general public can think. And they will sometimes very much play to their base, so to speak, play to their very hardcore fans. But I think if you're them, they know that Kirk's a good player. They would like to sign him. I don't think they think he's worth, you know, $30 million or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if anybody else in the league necessarily does either. So I don't think that they're going to overpay. But I think they would absolutely like to keep him.
So based on the conversations I'm having, I'm pretty confident at this point that Jay Gruden has no interest in paying Kirk Cousins close to $30 million. That he would rather spread a bunch of money around the rest of the roster and go in a different direction at quarterback than that. I'm curious about the Cousins-Gruden relationship right now. You heard it like we did. Kirk was not very happy with Jay's assessment of him at the end of the season. I do think they like each other. I'm not trying to say that they don't.
Right.
They work well together, but this is not Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan.
No, it's not. But I do think Kirk also appreciates the critical eye that Jay has for him, and he knows that's going to push him to get better. But I don't think he appreciates necessarily that being played out as publicly as he did in those postseason comments. I think that, like, that's a blip. That's not something that's gonna curtail negotiations. There are other relationships in that building that Kirk has that I think are more important in terms of their sourness potentially affecting negotiations and his willingness to be here. I don't think Jay Gruden's a roadblock in any way, shape, or form to Kirk being here. That's something where if he all of a sudden is gonna re-sign or does re-sign, they'll talk talk it out and go, you know what, let's maybe not handle that the same way next time. How can we be better for each other? That's not anything that's going to prevent him from coming back.
It's at Craig Hoffman on Twitter. Feel free to tweet him as I just did and mock him for not having seen the movie Friday. And he doesn't get it when I go, Craig, put some water on that bleep bleep. Now, he doesn't get that. But here's what I do want to know from you as an expert in this field. There's other orders of business besides the quarterback.
Yes.
What's their priority here? What are their plans? What are they thinking besides the Kirk Cousins business?
I mean, I think Brown's obviously huge in terms of figuring out what he's going to be, but I don't know. Like, I think their priorities in terms of importance and their priorities chronologically might not exactly line up. Like, clearly Cousins is the number one priority, but they can't get him done first because he's not willing to negotiate until he becomes a free agent. I think Zach Brown might be the same way because he's going to want to see what the market says, and I think he might be a little disappointed in what his market is. I don't think there's going to be a huge market for Zach Brown between the injuries and some of the pass coverage snafus, things like that. So I think their priority for right now, chronologically speaking, is are there more Quentin Dunbar, say a Ryan Grant, who you think you can offer a fair deal to? He goes, you want to know what? I like it here. I'd like to be here. Let's go ahead and get this done. All right, pen on paper, and let's move on and get as much of this solidified as we can. So those guys that they want to bring back, that they know they can bring back, they don't necessarily have to wait for a free and open market and free agency. I think those are the guys they probably chronologically want to get done right now. I would think Ryan Grant might be the top of that list.
Craig, thank you as always, buddy.
You got it.
See you, buddy.
Craig Hoffman, our Redskins beat reporter. Let's talk some hockey. J.J. Reagan of NBC Sports Washington. J.J., good having you back on the Beltway Blitz. The Caps continued to roll. It took overtime again, seventh time in nine games, but they got the Backstrom game winner. Came from behind to beat the Blues. Give us some of the deets.
Well, you know, it was interesting to see how they were going to come out because this is a team that doesn't do well when they have lengthy breaks, and their last game was on January 2nd. I thought they played very well in the first period. Looked like they took control of that game, and then the second period happened. They were outshot 11-0 before they got their first shot on goal. Their outshot total for that period 17-6. The Blues actually had more shots in that period than the Caps had for the game to that point. And then they went down 2-1. They rebounded in the third, obviously, and then they won the game in overtime. So, you know, it looked like they did better with the lengthy break, which is important because they're going to have a few of them this month. They had the bye week, and then they had the All-Star break. But the second period remains a concern for this team. It has been a concern all season long. It's definitely been their weakest, and that was, again, evident last night.
Longtime recording artist, folk singer, country musician, Jerry Jeff Walker Reagan. What the hell's going on? I'll do like a Seinfeld-style question. What's the deal with Andrei Burakovsky? What is going on? He's got 8 points this year. I'm so disappointed. My whole life is disappointment about this Burakovsky thing.
Yeah, it's disappointing. This was the way he played at the end of last season in the playoffs. I thought maybe he had the potential to be a top line winger this year with, you know, maybe Ovechkin declining. We saw that wasn't the case at all. And now the problem is finding a place for him in the lineup. At the end of the day, he can't be productive if he's on the fourth line, but you can't really justify taking anyone else out for him. I mean, you're not going to take out Brett Connolly. He scored again last night. You're not going to take out any of the right wingers who are all playing well except TJ Oshie, but you're not going to take him out either. You can't take out Devontae Smith-Pelly right now. He's playing too well. You can't take out anyone who you would replace him with, you virtually can't take out because they're playing too well. So you're caught in this position where you can stick him on the fourth line, and then he can't be productive because he's a goal scorer. He needs minutes. He needs to get into a rhythm. He needs to gain confidence. It's a tough situation. It's definitely been a disappointment thus far. He's someone who needs to produce. He's a goal scorer, and the fact that he's not getting points, I mean, it's just hurting his confidence, and it's just going in a spiral right now.
Yeah, he needs a big game to get himself going. JJ, we appreciate the time. Caps back in action. Capital One Arena tomorrow against Vancouver. And for the fans in attendance, they're giving out those bomber hats where you got your tri-bill warm winter hats.
Oh, I love those.
Which are awesome. JJ, thank you, buddy.
Next, Double J.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, enjoy yourself, man. I want one of those, by the way. I might have to send someone to just go get it for me at Capital
like,
One Arena.
I don't look good in, well, actually, ever. I don't know why I was going to say.
You don't wear hats.
Yeah, but I also look especially dumb in those kind of hats, but they're so comfortable.
I never wear them, but I like the idea of having it in my basement, like sitting on my bookshelf. Or
yeah,
something.
It just looks so comfortable.
It's a good-looking hat. Lockers made it look good on the telecast the last few nights when they've been promoting them. Let's do this next. We watched four playoff games this weekend. So did Goose Allen. What do you hope he wrote down in his notepad? What notes do you hope the Redskins took as they watched these playoff games? What do you hope they learned? That is the question. 800-636-1067 for your answers next on The Fan. Second half of Grant and Danny is well underway. Phone lines are filling up. 800-636-1067, you want to hop in. We always like to do this during the playoffs from time to time, year in and year out. Fourth postseason together as we watch these playoff games. Only once during our time together have the Redskins played in the playoffs. What do you hope the Skins staff was jotting down? If I'm Bruce Allen and I sit there and my 80-inch flat-screen high-definition television in my basement is blaring a crystal clear broadcast of NFL playoff football. And I'm going to picture like a yellow steno pad. And I'm scribbling into my yellow steno pad. And I'm taking notes on what I'm seeing and what my team needs to do to get to this point. What do you hope Bruce Allen wrote down? What notes do you want the Redskins brass to have taken? We're going to give you some thoughts in a moment, but let's get to the phones. Tom's in Manassas. What's up, Tom?
Hey, Graham and Donnie. Thanks for having me here.
Hey,
I got three quick ones. There's a lot of mediocre to bad quarterbacks in the playoffs, so we have a good one. Let's try and keep them. Defensive line.
Yep.
Stop the run. And did you notice Kansas City's field? Like, how it was a good field. It was a playable field. And that's Kansas City.
What?
So... Yeah, I know. It's crazy,
it's
man.
It's the climate, Tom, because sometimes...
It's not cold in Kansas City. They don't get inclement weather.
It's freezing cold there.
Yeah, I guess the Bermuda,
I'm being
the
told
grass
it's freezing.
This is in my ear. They're telling me it does actually get cold. Well, it's a mid-Atlantic region.
Great call on the defensive line play.
That's mine.
It's always what I would be writing down this time of year.
And I underline it so many times.
How does Bruce Allen continually, I can't even single out Bruce, but just in general, the Redskins continually refuse. Jonathan Allen in the first round this past year was the first down defensive lineman they have
since
taken.
The 90s.
In the first round since Kenard Lang in 96. Do you remember Kenard Lang?
Of course I do.
Probably not very well. That was 22 years ago. Now, you could say, well, they drafted Brian Arakpo, who's the defensive end. They drafted Ryan Kerrigan. Yes, you're right. They are outside linebackers, pass rushers. I'm talking about space eating, block attracting, human magnet, smart car bodied and framed behemoth gentlemen who stand in the middle of your defensive line and make it difficult to move the line of scrimmage. I'm talking about pocket collapsing interior presences is. Matt Ioannidis, good story, had a good year until he got hurt and then kind of was just a dude for the rest of the season. That's a fifth round pick. Imagine if that was a first round or a second round pick.
Right.
Why is it that when they say we're going to sign some defensive linemen this year, it's always Terrence McGee or Terrence McClain. Might as well be the same guy. Stacy McGee.
Them, same guy.
Steven Paya.
Jason Hatcher.
That one at least he had 10.5 sacks the year before. So
in the fourth
whatever.
Round.
But sign me young defensive linemen in their prime who are difference-making impact players. They refuse to do that. Ever. So this is all well and good when Kirk Cousins leaves and you have close to $30 million to spend. We can all clap like seals. That's great. If you roll over $15 million because you didn't sign a Malik Jackson type, because you didn't go get
Snacks Harrison,
Adrian Claiborne, who had 6 sacks in a game. Or, you know how much fun I have watching Cam Jordan as a New Orleans Saint?
Yeah, he just gets to the quarterback a lot.
He is so good. I haven't had a guy like that in my life.
When you switch to the 4-3, I first of all think it was a mistake, but whatever. We've done it. You switch to the 3-4. You know what you need? You need really, really good 3. If you don't have a great 3, you're wasting your damn time. They've never had it. Now, they tried to start, and it also takes guys a little bit of extra time. Very few people are playing that 34. It's not glamorous when you come talk about defensive linemen for the most part as you're going down. I know you mix and match, and it's like a 4-3 in certain passing downs and blah, blah, whatever. You need excellence at that position, and you chose not to. You chose to kind of band-aid it and go from lily pad to lily pad of short-term fixes of veterans that didn't really fit in their previous place. You pay guys like starters who never really did it in the past or did it in a different scheme, etc. That has been their greatest failing since making the switch to the 34. In a 4-3, you can have four average guys and kind of get away with it in terms of first and second down. Pass rushers you still need. In a 34, you can't. You can't have average at that spot. You've got to be plus at that spot. They haven't come close. That's
not
the lesson.
Not even close.
That's the lesson. I underlined it a million times.
Ahmed in Rockville, you're on the fan. What's up?
What's going on, fellas? One thing I hope the Redskins notice, and this is something that we've discussed, is that the quarterback position in this league is super overvalued. If you paid attention, our backup quarterback was better than about four of the starting playoff quarterbacks in this league. The difference was they all had pretty good defensive lines, decent offensive lines.
But let me ask you a question.
And one playmaker.
Because I've heard this point a lot, and I think this needs to be said. I want to get your take on this. You can mess around and make the playoffs if you run the ball like the Titans do and play defense with a bad quarterback this year and a guy who had two more picks than touchdowns. You can get to the playoffs and beat Buffalo when they score three because they have a terrible quarterback and a worse offense if you're Jacksonville. Do you really for 1 second think that the Titans have any chance to win the Super Bowl or the Jaguars, if Blake Bortles plays like that, have any chance to beat New England and then Pittsburgh to get out of the AFC or vice versa, but those two teams in the next? No way. So you could beat the Bills if you're the Redskins with some Jag quarterback if you want to in the round one of the playoffs if you're in the AFC. You can't win three playoff games with that guy. There's no way. No terrible quarterback has ever won a Super Bowl.
I agree. I disagree with that.
I'd say Dilfer with the 2000 Raiders.
Okay. I don't think you can win with a terrible quarterback, but you can win with an average quarterback. And Eli Manning has won two Super Bowls being an average quarterback. Average to below average, actually, if you look at his numbers. And they won with defensive line pressure, a big two offensive weapons with either a nice tight end or a big wide receiver, and a running game. You don't need elite quarterback play to win Super Bowls.
I agree that you don't need elite quarterback play. Thanks for the phone call. I think you need good quarterback play.
Yeah, the easiest path is to get the quarterback right. I say easy, it's relative. You got to get one spot right. Now, it's hard to get it right, but if you do, and everybody's healthy at the end of the season, you got a chance. Rodgers, you look at Breeze, you look at Peyton Manning with the Colts, et cetera. That's the quickest path. If you got a Hall of Fame caliber player at quarterback and you get a couple things to break your way, you get a turn to bite the apple. But that's really hard to find. If you can't find it, you've got to build it that other way and have one of those all-time defenses with a rookie. When Roethlisberger got one, he was handing the ball off and dumping it down 20 times. Same with Russell Wilson as a young player when he won his. You could do it different ways, but if you can't get that star, you've got to find a way to do it like he's talking about.
I agree, but another mistake we make sometimes, though. Trent Dilfer is the example of probably the worst quarterback to win one. The year Brad Johnson won the Super Bowl in Tampa Bay,
he was pretty good.
He was a really good quarterback,
yeah.
Top half of the league passer. Eli Manning has never been great, in my opinion, but Eli Manning got hot, just like Joe Flacco did. Flacco is an average NFL quarterback in a great season, right? They had incredible stretches. You need a guy that can still have an incredible stretch. Does Blake Bortles have the ability to have that stretch? I'm not sure that he does. But if your point is just, you don't need a top 10 quarterback in the NFL to win the Super Bowl, I'll sign up for that all day long.
Yeah.
But I'll also tell you, it's a lot harder to win that way. A ton harder. So yes, can the Redskins win a Super Bowl?
Because you've got to get two dozen positions right, yeah.
With a mediocre quarterback? Sure. But you'd better not be wrong when you build your defense. You better not be wrong in the draft. You better not be wrong when you build your supporting cast. And there are organizations, whether it's Baltimore or the Giants at times, that have been able to do that. I have no faith that the Redskins can just be right constantly in player evaluation and everything else that they do. What would give you that faith?
Yeah, I got a couple other notes, too, that I want to share.
Me, too, and we'll get to more calls. 800-636-1067. Good phone call by Ahmed. Keep them coming. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously. But shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. We'll get into the Kirk Cousins event from Friday. Some of the audio that stood out to us early next hour at about 1:15 or so. Wanted to take your calls, though, on the Redskins. Front office, like the rest of us, execs sitting down watching the playoff games. What do you think they jotted down? What notes do you hope that they took? 800-636-1067. Before we get back to the phones, my main answer was the defensive line. I need pocket collapsers. That is what I hope Bruce Allen wrote down. I need defensive linemen who can take over a game. And I want them to spend a couple early draft picks on their front seven. Maybe that's an inside linebacker that helps out in the running game, just plugging things and gaps up at the line of scrimmage. But to me, the front seven is where I want the focus, and specifically the interior of the defensive line. What else do you have that you hope that they jotted down?
So double down on defensive line. Of course, I've been screaming that like a crazy person for a decade. But the extra thing I looked at this weekend, speed. Speed, speed, speed. Every spot, the teams that are dynamic have speed. I'm now over. In an ideal world, I want that running back that weighs, I want Ironhead Hayward that weighs 280 pounds and grinds the defense down at 4 yards a pop in the fourth quarter, blah, blah, blah. Game has changed. I want speed. I want Devontae Freeman. I want Christian McCaffrey. I want, pick your scat back. Pick your guy that's quick out of the backfield, getting up and down the field. I want my Kamara. I want my toys. I need speed. I need Hill going deep. I need somebody that can take the top off the defense. Everybody's so fast now, you've got to find elite speed somewhere. The Redskins don't really have it. They got Jameson Crowder's nice and quick. He's legit. You know, Josh Doctson, I hear so much about his, you know, 4-5 speed. He's a little bit longer to get going because he's a big guy. I want that burner that terrifies people. I need more speed on both sides of the football.
You know, that hasn't
everywhere.
Been talked about certainly by us today, but I don't know that anyone's brought that up since Kirk Cousins' Friday 90 minutes with us. That was maybe the most candid he was on anything. When we asked him what he would add to the offense, and I absolutely kind of expected just a PC answer, and he basically said we need a guy who can run.
Receivers are a work in progress is what he said. Yeah,
yeah. But he also said we need a guy who can fly. He talked about basically replacing DeSean Jackson with someone who runs. He said, look, I know there aren't a lot of guys who run 4.25s, but his point is we could not take the lid off at all.
I want speed everywhere.
After the Terrell Pryor injury, it hurt us a lot because we couldn't stretch the field. We need someone who can do that. I thought that was really really interesting. Andrew Stafford, what's up?
Andrew.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey, bud.
I think it's kind of sad if our executives are watching the playoffs and learning things, because if they don't already know how screwed up we are, I mean, you look at Derrick Henry. Look what he did. Look at the Jags defensive line. I mean, if they don't know that these are issues already, I don't know that they're ever going
to
be.
Well, I'm sure they know. It's just a fun way to have the conversation. Let's go to Anthony in Fairfax. What's up, Anthony?
Anthony.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
I just imagine Bruce Allen writing over and over in his notebook, we're winning off the field, so we got to start winning on the field. Just over and over. And also, he's going to go get Blake Bortles because he's got one more playoff win than Kirk Cousins.
It's a good point. He is a winner when it comes to the playoffs. He has hashtag killer instinct and hashtag intangibles, hashtag leadership. Let's go to Maddie in Stafford. What's up, Matt?
If I'm team president now, I'm thinking I need a weapon that must be contained, and if they try to shut down a running back that's so good, the defense has to focus on, no matter who's playing quarterback, Jay Gruden will be able to have that passing game carve up the defense. And I think if I'm team president now, I'm probably pulling out my 3x5 black hard-backed notebook. It's not college ruled. And I'm writing down Saquon. And I'm underlining it twice. And I'm trading up for him, whatever it's got to take.
So I wouldn't move up in this draft to get Saquon Barkley. I think you have too many needs, and I think that moving up just proves to be too costly, as we've seen early in the first round.
Yeah, we've seen that.
I do have no problem with drafting Barkley. Like, if you were to tell me right now, and this won't happen, but he fell to 13, and as badly as I want the Redskins to take an inside linebacker, We'll see one of the guys I really want playing in the national title game tonight for Georgia. Oh, by the way, Roquan Smith. But if they don't do that, or they don't draft a defensive lineman because, whoops, Saquon Barkley fell into our lap, especially if Kirk Cousins is out, you have no one on offense that is an impact player at all. If you get rid of Kirk Cousins, or let him move on is a better way to put it, I don't care if you bring in, you know, a Teddy Bridgewater, Case Keenum, whoever the best guy you like the most among the veterans are, they're game managers. That's what those guys are.
Right.
There is no one that strikes fear into opponent. You don't have that at the wide receiver position. Suddenly, you have to add a skill position player that can put the team on his back. So at 13 overall, I'd have no problem with that. Would I trade up 6 or 7 picks to do it? No chance.
Yeah, not, it's not for me. And again, there are too many, and you know my axiom on this, we've disagreed, but there are too many Kareem Hunts, too many Alvin Kamaras, too many David Johnsons, where the real value is you get that first round superstar production with the right skit, fit, right scheme, right everything, where you get that guy that kind of works for you in those middle tier rounds. So every time a Samaje Perine goes and is just very pedestrian, you look up and a Kareem Hunt went before him, and you look up and a Alvin Kamara went before him, and you go, I can't believe we missed on that because we were looking for something else. To me, there's too many guys, whether it's a Royce Freeman, Nick Chubb, Sony Michel might come out. It's not the ideal every down back.
But last year, this time, you could be saying, like, Samaje Perine is one of the names you just said. Some of those guys, the percentage chance of hitting on anyone that's not going in the first or second round of running backs is really low. So many of those guys get taken. We don't talk about the ones that don't work out. There's 30 running backs or whatever that get drafted. So my point is, like, for every 3 that don't work, 1 in the 4th round does. You're still batting a low batting average. I just think when you got a guy who's special, if you think someone's special, we thought that with Ezekiel Elliott, you see what he's done for the Cowboys. Adrian Peterson years ago out of Oklahoma, see what he's done for Minnesota, or did, past tense, for Minnesota. To me, Barkley is of that ilk. I don't know if you think he's of that kind of conversation. To me, I think Saquon Barkley will be a better NFL player than Ezekiel Elliott. That isn't to say he'll put up better numbers, because the offensive line probably won't be as good as Dallas's. But he's a better pass catcher. He's every bit as good a runner. He's got similar kind of speed. To me, he is a game-changing presence.
When you, it's the, when he's special, you do it. I think the group of who's special starts to grow because everyone's so desperate for it. Does that make sense?
No, I agree. But would you agree that Saquon Barkley is special?
I think he's really good.
Would you agree that he's, so do you agree with the philosophy that if you can draft an Ezekiel Elliott in the top 10 or a Adrian Peterson in the top 10, you do it if you need a running back?
No. I
would do that.
Because I don't have Dallas's offensive line. I don't have that situation. If I did, and I'm a piece away, yeah, let's do it. But I'm the Redskins.
You got a real good offensive line.
I don't think I'm ever gonna have a good running game with that traditional sense.
You're certainly not if you don't at some point get a good running back.
That's fair.
They haven't had in several years.
They never have.
Go to Kevin in Arlington. What's up, Kevin?
Kevin.
Yeah, you know, if I'm Bruce, I'm thinking, how does New Orleans do it? Because while we're taking Dotson, they're taking Michael Thomas. And while we're taking Ryan Anderson, they're taking Alvin Kamara after us. I mean, Grant, since Mike Shanahan left the building, who are impact players on offense? I mean, Chris Thompson and Jordan Reed were drafted in 13 in Mike's last draft. Now, granted, they're both injury prone, but those
That's
are
a great
our
point.
Last
Crowder is the only one. Crowder is one you give McLuhan.
And he really regressed, both as a punt returner and as a catcher this
True.
Year. It was dramatic how much he regressed. So.
Cool.
I'm sorry. And the other thing is, we're terrible on the second round, okay? Terrible. You know, Preston Smith, Ryan Anderson, I can go on and on. We're not nailing the second round. Sue Cravens, we've got to get ballers that can
Amerson.
Start.
Amerson, think about Amerson at 51. It's a great call. Preston Smith I disagree with because he's got, I think 21 sacks now in 3 years, something like that.
You would say he's been fine.
Yeah, he's had 2 8-sack seasons. He's had intercepted passes that have helped you win games.
He's had good moments.
Absolutely. So to say that is not a second-round pick that
but
has been
productive. But I think the point stands. I get it.
But yes. And, oh, by the way, while they haven't been good in the second round, which is 100% correct because he's the best they've had, I'd throw Trent Murphy in there as another second-rounder, by the way, who's had one good season and a bunch of not helpful seasons. They didn't have first-round picks during much of that time.
Right.
Amerson was the first pick in his draft class. You know, wasn't Trent Murphy the first guy they took that year? Or did they take someone before him? Because of the Griffin injury,
the trade,
you didn't have first-round picks. You haven't been great in the second round. So you've got one of these steals here or there, Bashaud Breeland in round 4, Jamison Crowder in round 4. that kind of keep your draft classes from being debacles.
2011, it was Jarvis Jenkins. 2012, no second-round pick. 2013, David Amerson. 2014, Trent Murphy. 2015, Preston Smith. 16, Cravens. 17, Ryan Anderson, a guy that I was bitterly disappointed in this year.
You don't have one guy in that group that's a great player.
Nope.
I would say Preston Smith's the only guy in that group that's a good player, and he's wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, NFL starter. He would play on a lot of teams.
Yeah.
It's not one of those wins. It's not one of those home runs.
By the way,
he's
not a starting OLB on most teams, I don't think. Now, he would play because you'd find roles
rephrase.
For him.
Starter's a relative term. I mean, he would be a useful player on a lot of teams.
100% agree with you. He's playing a good chunk of the snaps on good defenses because of his length and his speed and his size and his athleticism. But as just a stand-up rush around the end linebacker like the Redskins use him, there's a lot of teams he's not a starter on. He's okay. There are days where he's good. There are days where he's just another dude on the field. That's actually a really smart point. Their second round, considering that their first round has mostly been non-existent over the last several years.
You got a hit.
You need to do a little bit better. At some point, you need to have found a guy that is, oh my gosh, we got a perennial Pro Bowler here at number 46 overall. Most teams have that. Let's get to the national championship game tonight. Who are you pulling for, Georgia or Alabama? Who do you think's going to win? Who do you want to win? We'll discuss next on The Fan. Tonight's the night the national championship game will be played in college football. Alabama and Georgia. Basically the SEC title game 2.0. This is a matchup people have wanted all year long. We got the closest version of this when Georgia played Auburn as we got the national title game. And of course, Georgia didn't look good in that game, but now we've got the three-seeded Bulldogs, the four-seeded Crimson Tide, two upsets in the semifinals of the college football playoff. First things first, am I off base here when I say that this is the least chatter the day of a national title game I can ever remember?
There's so little buzz, and I think it's because of a few things. One, it's Alabama again. Two, it's an SEC-only thing, and it's like 96% of the country's like, I got no ties. I don't really care.
Do you think if you're a college football fan of a team in a different conference, you're turned off because there is so much back and forth and arguing and territorial fighting over conferences that because it's two SEC teams, if you're one of these guys who loves Ohio State and talks about how good the Big Ten is, or if you like ACC football or what have you, you don't even want to know about tonight because you think it's just a coronation for the SEC.
Yeah, you just feel like it's another Alabama thing. Of course they got in, and there's debate about whether they should have or not. Forget about how good they are. They're favored to win tonight. So everyone knows they're good. As soon as they got in, they were favored to win it. But, you know, the committee just somehow found a way to get Alabama in over the objections of Big Ten folks and whoever else. But I guess my point is something about they haven't figured this plus one thing out just yet in terms of excitement. Because remember, whether it was last year or the year before, I forget which one, they played those semifinal games on like New Year's Eve day and then into the night. And nobody watched that second game, that primetime game on like a Saturday night at 8 o'clock. No one saw it. And nobody really cared about how the finals would kind of go. They haven't figured out how to get the right buzz just yet for this national championship game. And well, nobody seems to care.
One problem they have is the timing because it's after the first weekend of the NFL playoffs.
Yeah.
So you're not going to spend a lot of time over the weekend, short of being a huge fan of the Tide or of the Georgia Bulldogs, talking about this game. Because if you're a big football fan, you're getting together with people this weekend, you're watching the NFL games.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the NFL playoffs. That's one issue. From a media standpoint, let's say I'm ESPN or I'm one of these networks who covers college football extensively. Over the weekend on Saturday, on Sunday, am I spending more time previewing and analyzing the NFL games that are about to happen or just happened? Or am I looking ahead 2 days away and 1 day away to tomorrow's national championship? I think in some way they're paying the price, college football is, for just how quick the news cycle happens now. Like today is the day for college football. From this morning on, I'm sure it'll get the run on all of the big TV shows that are happening around the country. Although I will say every time I've looked up at any of the headlines on one of these First Take or terrible shows that we have on our TV in the corner of the screen that you normally try to change because you hate them, all I see is Titans, Chiefs. I still see things from this weekend in the NFL. Would it be different, though, if it was Clemson again against Georgia? I don't think so. Now, is it really just the boredom of Alabama making it to the national final for the third time in three seasons. They didn't win last year. They won, obviously, the Cotton Bowl under Saban back in 15. They won the Peach Bowl for the national, I should say lost the Peach Bowl last year, got there again. And this year they could win their second in 3 years. I don't think it's a boredom thing with Alabama, but I do think you're right about the SEC. It's a small geographical area of the country that cares, and everyone else
basically cares so much.
Rolls their eyes because it's another night where you've got to hear all about the SEC.
I do think there is Alabama fatigue. I really do. And I think the SEC part of it, the regionalness of it, is a factor. But regardless, this is actually going to be kind of fun, I think. I'm looking forward to the game, believe it or not. Alabama's defense, now that they're fully healthy, that defensive line, now that you've got Hand back and fully operational, he was incredible in that game, and Evans and Davis. And just, again, just write down one of those names, please, for the Redskins and bring one of those guys up here. Bring three of them up here. Thank you, Phyllis. I love that matchup of that defensive front going up against Georgia's incredible two-headed monster, the running game of Michelle and Chubb. To me, this is more about can Georgia the worst sides of the ball for each team, right? Georgia's defense has been pretty good over the course of the year. Can that group shove it on Alabama's offense, which I think is vulnerable? I don't know if Alabama's going to play both quarterbacks as they kind of threatened to in this last game, if they're going to have, you know, Hurts' ability to run the ball, etc. To me, this is about what Alabama's offense does and what Georgia's defense does in this game. I think it could be one of those back-and-forth close situations. I'm excited about it, but I don't get the sense many people are.
What should we set the over-under for rushing yards for Georgia at between Sony Michel and Nick Chubb?
How could you do that with Alabama's defensive line?
That's hard. But
150, would you say?
I will say this. I don't think people thought Oklahoma would shut them down, but I do think with several weeks to prepare for that game, the expectation was that the Sooners, who had some size up front, would be able to slow that running game down a little bit. Because, you know, their plan was, let's make Jake Fromm beat us. And all he did was do exactly that.
Yeah.
But it was pretty easy when you're rushing for a couple hundred yards. I think my call for tonight, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to call me crazy, I actually think Georgia's going to be able to run the ball on Alabama. Not quite at will, but consistently.
They'll pop a couple?
I think those two guys combine for over 150 rushing yards. And it's not going to be like a bunch of huge runs. It's going to be pretty consistently wearing Alabama down, and people are going to be shocked by it.
So their statistical rankings in the NCAA, you can't tell them apart. Offense overall, Alabama 7, Georgia 8. Passing 19, Alabama, Georgia 16. Rushing 4-5. Defense 1-4. Versus the pass 1-8. Versus the rush 6-11. Special teams 31st and 30th. I mean, they are mirror images of each other. This is the team that Georgia's been waiting for. They're one of these, like, almost got it fan bases that has never quite broken through, and now they think this is their best chance, and they're pretty reasonably right.
Andre's in Manassas. Dre, I want to squeeze you in. We're late, so be quick, but I like your point here. What do you got?
Sure. The problem is, A, the game starts too late. I mean, I can't commit 5 hours to this particular game, and they're playing on a Monday night. And that's another thing. It's not an event. It's not like the Super Bowl. It's not like a boxing match where you invite your friends over and the excitement, because you get excited having your buddies over. But this is like, after work, I go home, watch the TV. It's like basically me and my wife, and, you know, who wants that? Well, I hope she's not listening. Sorry. My bad. Oops.
I can't turn.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Easy,
that's
fellas.
Funny.
We like Andre.
Well, I tell you, Phyllis didn't like what he said about going home and hanging out with his wife.
Clearly. How dare you?
He wasn't happy about that. He's right, though. These bowl games are so long. These playoff college football games, I feel like halftime itself goes for 45 minutes.
Yeah, they're too long because they stop the clock after every first down. I would change that instantaneously.
You and me both. Get back into the Redskins and Kirk Cousins in our final hour. Also spin you around the NFL after a entertaining weekend of playoff football. You're listening to Grant and Danny.
Nick Saban is a better man than you are.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.